We are back once again, 241st time, Parish of the Patriots. I'm glad you're here, whether you're a return member of the congregation or a new listener. It's great to have you here. I'm excited. I always come in excited to do the show. If you are new around here, we do have a Christian-specific segment, the sermon, if you would. That's roughly the halfway mark of the show, very roughly. So look forward to that. Don't tune it out, even if you think, oh, I ain't got no time for that. You're going to like it. Honestly, it's the best part of the show. Now, this first part of the show, you just kind of get whatever I feel like talking about. In the Christian-specific segment, well, you still get more or less what I want to talk about. But it is interesting. It's good stuff, so be sure and check that out. The show is the show. There's nothing behind paywall. You get it for free. If you get something out of it, drop something in the plate. It is very much appreciated. Very simple. I got snail mail. Doesn't get to look, if you can address an envelope... If you don't know how to address an envelope, look it up on the internet. Look it up on your phone. You can figure out how to address an envelope. Drop something in there. Drop your note in there. I get a kick out of the listener supporter mailbag. You know, gives me something to talk about. Drop something in there. It is appreciated. Got snail mail, Bitcoin, Monero. Got my email address. You can drop your notes there in the email. If you got a different kind of cryptocurrency, let me know. I'll get you an address for that. I'm not proud. I shall partake of thine shit coins, because beggars can't be choosers. Very beggarish. And I do appreciate everybody that drops something in the plate. You know, I've got folks like Mr. T every week. I got folks that drop something in once a month. And those of you that drop once a year, I've got listeners that once a year, they drop something in there. I don't forget about y'all. Like, I don't forget the rest of the year that, you know, y'all put something in there. It means a lot to me. I appreciate it. If you get something out of the show and you've never put something in there, please consider doing so. I'm poor. I would really appreciate it. Oh, and I'm fixing to do the listener supporter mailbag. I forgot I had a note right here to bring this, because this came up over the past week or so again, and I haven't mentioned it in a long time. You look on the description page here, like for my shows, and, you know, I got snail mail and I got my Bitcoin and my Monero address. All of that is very, very there on the description page. But down below that, at like towards the bottom of the page, it says something like, you know, we can now accept donations at this new Bitcoin address or something like that. And that's on all the shows. Day of the National, it's on bottom of Dr. Johnson shows. That is an address Sven set up for Radio Album. I mean, I leave it up there. And if you've sent Bitcoin to that address, I mean, it's there for Sven when he gets out. I mean, it's fine. It's not lost. Just know that myself nor Dr. Johnson have access to that. So there sometimes is some confusion, and people see that and they think that's the Bitcoin address at the very, very bottom where it says that. But that is not, like I say, that is a Bitcoin address Sven had set up back before he went away. And again, if you've sent there, don't freak out about it, like it got lost or something. It'll be there when he gets back. I can't get in there. Now, I'm Dr. Johnson and I both, we don't have access. So if you want to support our work, again, I've got my stuff pretty clearly spelled out on Dr. Johnson's show. I've been putting a link at the top, you know, of where you can go to his page, and all of his support info is right there. It's convenient. Just didn't want there to be any confusion. GPD, the clown world wants to get people in the Christmas thing earlier and earlier. Even now, I'm starting even to receive Christmas cards. Honk honks, say hello to Sven. This from Triangle Whip. And it is, because it's just marketing, you know? It's their boost. They're goosing the economy. It's goose the economy time, the home stretch. Don't even get me started. The closer we get to Christmas, y'all know I'm going to be unleashing on how it makes me sick. How the materialism, the happy holidays materialism makes me want. Makes me want to vomit. Dan. Hey, Dan. excuse me. I haven't gotten to listen to the shows recently, but I see that the website's still up and running and you're still uploading. So I trust you're still going strong. Keep it up. Keep the faith. Your brother in Christ, Michael. Well, we are. We're trying to keep it up. I hope y'all get a chance. Hey, y'all know I've been doing my best to hold down the fort with the Daily Nationalist show. I mean, this show here, this is my territory. This is my home turf. The Daily Nationalist shows not so much. It's Sven's home turf. And I do realize how much work he put in. It's we're a skeleton operation until he gets back. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he did it. You know, doing a Daily Nationalist show Monday through Friday, you know, plus other shows he was doing and this and that. And I'm doing Friday Daily Nationalist, Monday Daily Nationalist, and this show. That's three shows per week. And I'm just like, I need a vacation. My man's Finn, he's like a machine. He's like a podcasting machine. GPD, wish I had something clever to write besides dough for the show. That's from Mr. T. You know, I could start making up stuff for you. I was thinking about this. I'll start making up lines. Let's see here. Oh, yes, P.S. added by me. He didn't really write this. Hey, I'm glad the show's more or less don't suck. Keep up the, you know, the mediocre, but sometimes good work from Mr. T. I just add. See, I can add clever lines for you like that because I'm that way. We're 5 minutes in. I've already done the whole spiel about how you can support the show, and we've gone through the listener supporter mailbag. Don't be sending me nasty notes about all you do is ask for money. 5 minutes. That's 5 minutes in and out, and you get in the show for free. So I don't even want to hear it. By the way, I don't know if y'all caught it, just in case y'all didn't catch it because it kind of happened after the fact. I recorded a Tuesday Daily Nationalist last week, same day as the Parish of the Patriots went up, about the Israel Palestinian thing. So you might check that out. Just my humble opinions on the matter. I pretty much stick with it. I read an interesting thing, and I brought this up just briefly on the Friday installment. I believe it was the Daily Nationalist. But I read an interesting thing the other day, and they were talking. There was something, an interview, or they were talking to a retired Israeli general or commander or whatever. And he used to be in charge of that border section. And he basically is verifying what I'm saying. He was like, look, there's literally no way. He said, there's literally no way this happened and nobody knew about it. He said, he went into some of the detail. Of course, obviously he can't get into like everything that's done there. That's obviously going to be secret. But I mean, stuff he could reveal about like how micromanage the Israeli military is on that border. And again, he was in charge of more or less that section of the border. And he was like, yeah, there's no way. No way. He's like, basically, you know, if a rat runs across there, we know about it. Oh, but they just come rolling over there, coming over there on some little paraplane that goes like 10 miles an hour. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they just didn't know. Totally caught by surprise. You know, of course, now, you know, they issued this thing the other day. They said, because I'm recording the show, by the way, Saturday morning, which is when I usually record. You know, they issued this thing the other day. I'm sure y'all read about it. You know, they're telling these people, you know, evacuate. This is like the day after. They're like, we're totally sieging the Gaza Strip. Then they drop leaflets. Evacuate the Gaza Strip or you're going to all get slaughtered. Which is it? Are y'all laying siege? or are you going to let them evacuate? Millions of people. You got 24 hours. Get millions of people on foot, somehow climbing through the rubble while bombs are falling. But y'all got that 24 hours to get out of there. It's a damn shame, you know, because as I always say, and again, I said this. I'm trying not to rehash too much of what I've already said, but it is a fundamental fact of life that in wars and conflict, it's always regular people. You know, it's always the regular people who suffer. It's always the regular people that get drafted into the military. He always knows the rich people. Their kids are always magically, some way, shape, or form, they're always exempt. It's always the regular people that get pressed into service, that get conscripted. It's always the regular people who wind up getting their houses bombed. It's always the regular people who can't find food now because everything's been blown up. Regular people are always the ones that suffer. You know, it's always regular people on both sides of a conflict. You have to sit there and say, now, I mean, when you have a lopsided conflict like what we're seeing here, where they're just wiping people's, they're just indiscriminately. I saw some of the videos the other day, and the Western media, of course, doesn't flinch about it because they have their unwavering support for Israel and their justified cause against these evil Palestinian terrorists. You know, and they show these videos of like entire apartment complexes just boom, blown to rubble. And I was thinking of this, of course, in the context of every time like an alleged Russian missile has struck an apartment complex, whether it actually was or if it was a Ukrainian missile, they were like, oh my gosh, the Russians are targeting civilians. How many civilians are the Russians killing now? And like there, they got video after video of Israel just leveling block after block of apartment buildings. And it just, not a peep, not a word. And they wonder why, and they wonder why the media has no credibility. Now, look, again, I made, listen to my show last Tuesday. I don't want to wind up rehashing, but conflicts are never so simplistic as these people. This is the team you cheer for. These are the good guys, and these over here are the bad guys. So since they're the bad guys, everything they do is horrible and evil. These are the good guys, so everything they do is going to be virtuous and good because they are the good guys. If that's your level of thinking, then you are officially a dumbass. And really, if that's your understanding of the world around you, then you are a dumbass. Should always be able to look at the big picture. Look at the country. Now, if you, you know, that's if you're not directly in it. If your house is being bombed, you don't give a shit about the nuances. Your house got a bomb on it. If your family got blowed up, if people came across the border and you're having a party at your house and these guys show up in a truck and machine gun everybody down and drag hostages off, you're not going to care about the nuance. All you care about is people you know got shot and killed and people got drug off or a bomb got dropped on your house. It's personal for you. But if you're outside of it, you should be able to look at the bigger picture. And of course, this is what politicians are supposedly paid to do. They're supposed to be, we're supposed to have diplomats that look at these things. And they're supposed to have, you know, look at the big picture and what we understand. But they don't. Hell, that's what's bad. The people that are allegedly running this foreign policy, they have a good guy, bad guy mentality, just like the average NPC bot person. I saw a funny thing the other day in Britain. Suella Braverman came out and she's demanding the UK police investigate people for hate crimes if there's a pro-Palestinian protest. She wants the police to crack down on these pro-Palestinian protests. I'm like, good luck. You know, like majority of London is Middle Eastern. Good luck with cracking down on the hate speech now. You know, you've imported the entirety of the Middle East into your country. And now what? You're going to crack down on them if they, you know, because your government is unwavering support to Israel forever. And, but you've imported the Middle East whose sympathies are going to lie with the Palestinians. That's going to work out well. It's going to work out very well. Good luck with that. Speaking of World War III, speaking of hot topics. Y'all probably familiar with the story, but the U.S. had done this deal with Iran, you know. They were going to, you know, Iran was going to release these American prisoners who got caught spying. I mean, they're always like accused by the Tehran, by the, you know, Islamic State of Iran. They accuse them, like they try to imply like it's a false accusation. Like there's no way those people were there spying. No way. They had to all be innocent. They're totally just innocent. They weren't there spying. Iran was going to release these spies in exchange for, I don't know, $8 billion of their own money. You know, you got a lot of the TMR people going around, my gosh, the Biden regime is paying them Iranians $8 billion. Well, it's their money. You stole their money. It's like you stole their money and you're like, well, I'll give you part of your money back if you'll do what I want. Well, the Iranians released the spies and then the U.S. reneged on the deal. Oh, well, we're not going to give them that money after all because, you know, they don't side with Israel during this most important of conflicts. And I was thinking of this, you know, because again, Russia, Putin catches a lot of heat because it's like, well, why was he still, why is he still continue to supply any gas to Western Europe who are constantly supporting the Ukraine and sending weapons to Ukraine and men to Ukraine? They don't admit that, but they are. They're sending people to Ukraine as well. They're providing intelligence to Ukraine. They're providing targeting information for Ukraine. They sabotaging Russia. They're doing all of this stuff, and yet he's still sending gas. And people are like, Putin's like retarded or something. Why is he doing that? And the Russian response is always, well, we're fulfilling our contracts. We signed these contracts. We signed these contracts with people. And so, you know, we're going to fulfill them. And it isn't about. And I think I touched on this on one of the previous Daily Nationalist shows. But you know, it's not about the gas still sending whatever amount of gas to fulfill the contracts. It's the message they send to the rest of the world that you can do business with us, unlike the U.S. The U.S. has become, this country has become so short-sighted that they just, you know, oh, well, what can we do right now? Right now, oh, we just won't give them the money. See, they're the opposite extreme. They don't care how it looks. But everybody else in the world is going, man, you can't make a deal with these people. That you can't trust them anywhere, anyhow, shape, or form. But you look at Russia and China, and they'll stick with a deal even if it doesn't make sense for them because they made the deal. Who are you going to make a deal with? I know who I would make a deal with, for sure. You're going to make the deal. If you're going to make a deal with somebody that has a track record that they'll fulfill the contract even when the other side is arming their opposition, then you can rest assured that you can do a regular run-of-the-mill deal with these people and they're going to hold up their end of the bargain. Where the U.S., on the other hand, does the opposite. They do the opposite. You know, I never call the U.S. a nation because it's not. We don't have a nation. That's just a fact. This is a country. I use the word country because it's the best word I can come up with, but it's not a nation. This is very relevant in the context of as we watch World War III continue to escalate, because we don't have a nation. A nation is people who have a shared, overall, a shared familial bond. It's a racial thing. You know, a nation is the people. There's going to be a blood tie. In other words, if you have China as an example, Han is vast majority Han Chinese. So there is a, you know, extended familial bond. When you have a nation, you go and you'll fight to defend, you'll fight for your extended family. You know, if somebody breaks into your house, you know, it doesn't matter how many of them there are, you're going to use whatever weapons you can or whatever tactics you can to defend your family. You know, that's in the immediate sense, but you extend that to the nation. When you have a nation, you'll go off to war. When they say, well, you know, this country is attacking our border, we got to go defend our border. And you perceive it mentally as an assault on your extended family. So you will. You'll go join up and you'll fight and risk your life to defend your extended family. But we don't have that. We have this thing. And of course, it's curious because as it extends, they're going to at some point want to draft people. Well, I don't know if they'll go that route or not, because I think that would quite possibly just blow up. The civil unrest could go basically, like, figuratively speaking, nuclear in this country if they did. But at some point in time, they're going to be tempted. They're going to float the question of conscription, of bringing back the draft. You know, who's going to sign up? Then they're talking, you read all these stories all the time about, you know, their recruitment numbers are down. Nobody wants to join the U.S. military. Well, why would you? You go join to fight to defend your extended family, your nation, but we don't have a nation. Who's going to go fight for our democracy values of who we are? In other words, a bunch of marketing slogans that some Yankee came up with. Nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to go fight and die for some abstraction that nobody really even knows what it means. Oh, I'm going to go fight and die for the rules-based international order of who we are. Nobody's going to do that. You add to that, it's going to be, you've got this question of they want people to join the military. They want people to join the military, whether voluntarily or they bring back the draft, to go to the other side of the planet to fight a war that's none of our business. Meanwhile, the border is literally open, and now they're talking about, oh, we're going to give these people even more money that are here, that they're just welcoming in. The Border Patrol now is basically just the welcome committee. They're just welcoming them all in. I got a text message. I don't remember if I've mentioned this before. I got this stupid text message the other day. You know, contact your state representative because Greg Abbott has got a special session of the Congress or of the legislature going, and he's proposing a school choice bill. It's like, really? That's our number one issue, a school choice bill. I replied, stop. The next thing to me is, are you sure you want to say, yes, quit sending me this crap. I don't care. Governor Abbott is bravely put forth a school choice bill. Like, people are flowing over the border. you know, this whole shit show is coming apart, but you're going to bring out a school choice bill. Hello, the 1990s called. Nobody's going to volunteer or put up with being drafted to go fight for a marketing slogan, to go fight for Raytheon, to go fight for BlackRock, to go fight for Wall Street, for the bankers, for abstract marketing terms that don't mean anything. Nobody's going to do that. They're not volunteering to do that. See, they act like that's unrelated. And you see people float this out there, well, we may have to bring the draft back because people aren't volunteering. You don't understand. The two are directly related. People aren't volunteering because they don't want to go fight for those ideas. They're not going to fight. That's not something worth going and fighting and dying for. If you try to then force it and bring back the draft, then people are going to fight to not do that. You know, people, a lot of times, I point out how, I don't know, socian, whatever term you want to use, how the American people are. Like, they will put up with so much crap. And they will. The key to this, because if you don't live in America, I observe these things. And you look at it and it's like, the American people just put up with anything. They will. I mean, they just, man, the government craps all over them and they push these policies and they do this and they do that. American people will put up with anything. Let me tell you, the American people will. They'll put up with anything because they're so hyper-individualized. They're so hyper-individualist. They'll put up with anything if they don't perceive it as affecting them personally. You have people that can rage and go on about the borders open and these people are coming over. But at the end of the day, if they don't feel as though it affects them personally, as long as they can say, well, it doesn't affect me personally. I can read about the economy going to crap and tanking. But if they feel like they're still doing more or less okay. You see, it's always about if it affects them personally. That's why I said if they try to bring back the draft because people aren't volunteering, that's suddenly going to affect them personally. And that's a ticking time bomb because there is a lot of pent-up rage. There is. There's a lot of pent-up rage. You know, but who are they going to rage against? You know, who exactly are they going to fight back? Or maybe you're going to send recruitment officers around to pick up your, pick up your family member because they ignored their draft notice. Now they got a target. I'm just saying. You're giving people a target, and it's going to affect them personally. It's always a mistake to look at any people and say, well, they'll just put up with this forever. That is always a mistake because nobody will put up with anything forever. There's a reason they're not pushing back. And when you make it personal, anytime you make things personal, if you can keep things as that's somebody else and that applies to somebody else, well, they're not going to do that to me. You know, they're not doing that to me. They're not turning my kid into a tranny in the seventh grade. That's happening to other people. That happens in California. That happens somewhere else. But when Americans, with their hyper-individualism, for worse, not for better, I mean, I do think it's a for worse situation, but for better or worse, it is what it is. When it does, when you do get on that individual, when you poke them on the individual basis, and now it's going to affect them personally and they can't say it isn't, and then, like I say, you couple that with what? You're going to send guys around, pick people up to draft them? You're poking them personally and you're giving them somebody a direct target they can fight back. I wouldn't take that job. If I was in the military and it's like, your job is to go out, we got this list of draftees that haven't showed up for their draft notice. You go out there and be like, no, I ain't going out there. You might as well go send me to the Ukraine, charge the Russian defense lines, because it's basically what you're going to be doing. And you don't know where you don't know which bush the guns are poking out of. It's a bad idea. Very bad. And these are the problems. The problem you get to when you don't have a country. This whole hodgepodge thing. You have a territorial area and a government that rules illegitimately, I would add, an illegitimate government that rules over you and issues dictates for the people on which they rule over. But you don't have, that's not a nation. It's a country, it's a state, I guess, but it's not a nation. It's not a nation. And that's what we have here. And there's always going to be an underlying current of conflict. And we're going to see, I do believe there's no way out of the fact we're going to see that. It's always a poor position to take. If you have the position of it hasn't, if you have this view of it hasn't happened yet equals it will never happen or it can never happen. That is always a mistake. You assume that because it hasn't happened yet, it can never happen. I say the American people put up with a lot of crap. That's true. Americans are very just, you know, they just are what they are. But again, I think it's a mistake to say, well, we haven't seen things really blow up yet, so that means they never really will. I think that's a mistake. And again, I think a key trigger to that is if they ever try to bring back the draft, because then it affects people personally. Then it affects them personally, and it gives them a target. It gives them something they can look at, somebody they can look at and say, there it is. There is what is affected. That represents what's affecting me personally. Now, again, you can have conscription in a nation because at the end of the day, people probably voluntarily show up. Because if you had a nation, you probably just do your voluntary military because people volunteer to come forward and defend their people, you know, their nation. But the idea is you're going to get people to go risk their lives, fight and die for our values of who we are. So BlackRock, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin can get a higher profit margin. Look, people know, you know, you can wave, do all the flag waving and talk about God bless America and fighting for our freedom. You can do that crap all you want to, but fewer and fewer people are buying it. Fewer and fewer people are buying into that crap. And they're going to have it's going to be a hard sell. It's going to be hard to sell, but at some point in time, they're going to have to sell it. As these things deteriorate, as we see World War III, I was thinking about this the other day. You know, you always hear about how many hundred and something, whatever, military bases, installations the U.S. has all over the world. You know, the U.S. has all these military bases all over the world. And I keep thinking as this escalates, those are a liability. So, oh, we got a military presence. We're covered. We got military all over that. That's a liability. As this escalates, that's a liability. Imagine having 100 and over 140 or whatever the case, whatever the exact number is. Imagine having 140 points of conflict, 140 plus, you know, vulnerabilities, places where they can hit you. That's what that's going to look like. Those are a liability. Those are not an advantage. That is going to be a huge disadvantage. Because you can't cover them all. You can't cover them. And every one of them they pick off. Look, it doesn't matter if it's an installation with 150 guys on there. You know, a little 150 soldier installation. It doesn't matter. A defeat's a defeat. You know, a group of guerrilla warriors come in there and kill everybody and take them prisoner. That's a loss. You know, and it registers in the people's minds as a defeat for your country. Same as if 10,000 guys get defeated and the base gets taken over and those start domino falling and people get the perception, you're a bunch of losers. You can't even defend. And all of those military installations are going to become a liability really, really, really quickly as this continues to escalate and spiral downhill into conflict. Very, very fun times. Let's get into the Christian specifics. Enough of this rambling. Let's just keep on rolling. Y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, I have to admit, I don't know how sermony it is. some weeks it's more sermon-like than others. Let's get back in real quick to the listener supporter mailbag. I had one here that it's more of the Christian-related topic, so I thought I'd move it over to this segment of the show. Grandpa Dan, thank you as always for your show and what you bring us. And don't ever be concerned with regards to your sermons if you think some of the things you say are repetitive, because there are many things, spiritual, scriptural, and otherwise, which often bear repeating. Case in point, in your last show, you brought up yet again the story Christ told about the wheat and the tares, reminding us that the children of the devil are among us. I've read this myself in the Gospel of Matthew and have heard it several times on your show. But now for the first time, I actually looked up pictures of wheat versus tares online and was amazed to see how similar these two plants look to one another and how difficult it could be for the untrained eye to tell them apart, except at the later stages like the time of harvest. I think this is significant. I've also read the Wikipedia entry on this parable, and it's amazing how many points of view it manages to insert, including interpretations for calls for greater tolerance. Thank you for Gramps. God bless and love no homo. And that's from Jay. And it is very much appreciated. I really do. I thank you for that, Jay. And yeah, that's a good, keen observation about how similar they can look. And of course, the Wikipedia article is going to call for more tolerance, more of the poison that has infected the church. The church is, it's infected by poison. I was reading an article for recording the show this morning, and it said in Argentina, you know, because all of these countries, you know, we have all these economic problems all over the world, and you know, their answer is always for all of this inflation. We see it here in the U.S. and everywhere else. The answer to the inflation is to raise interest rates. It's like that is the only thing they know to do. Anyway, I was reading this article, and they said that in Argentina, they have raised the key interest rate, okay, from 118% to 130-something percent, and still the inflation remains rampant and out of control. It's like more of the same poison. It's like at some point in time, you've got to look and you have to say, well, this cure isn't working. You know, what we're doing isn't working. It's leading to more and more negative impacts. But they don't, because that's the only thing they seem to know how to do is just raise interest rates. Well, we'll just raise the interest rates higher. And yet the currency is collapsing. People don't want it. Tolerance is the same thing in the Christian church. It's more of the same poison. Oh, we got to have more tolerance. What we need to do is have more tolerance. Congregation numbers are plummeting. Interest in churches. Fewer people are identifying as Christian or identifying the U.S. as a Christian nation, which is correct because the U.S. is not a Christian nation now for sure, than ever before. And the only answer the churches seem to have is, well, what we need more tolerance. It amazes me how everything is modeled after capitalism. These churches all run on a business model. Well, what do we got to do to get more customers in here? We've got to get more customers in here. And they abandon the truth. This is why you can't put money ahead of your work in the Lord. Because if you follow Jesus' example, you're going to make people upset. You're not always, you know, the customer's not always right. Imagine going into a business and they tell you straight to your face, no, the customer's not right at our business. So people are going to go somewhere else where the customer's always going to be right. You can't run a church that way. You can't run an operation where we're supposed to, we've been tasked with telling the truth, which people most of the time aren't going to want to hear, with a customer's always right. No, we need more tolerance. That's what the church needs, more of the same poison. At this point, saying the church needs tolerance. Every time I hear some Christian preacher or teacher talk about tolerance, I'm just going to remember that story about raising the interest rates even further in Argentina, and they can't stop the currency from collapsing. It's more of the same madness. Talking about MCC sort of things, I come across a video. I get random videos pop up in my feed, and I had a video pop up the other day, and sometimes I'll click on this because, see, I'm interested. I want to see what other people are saying, what other people are thinking, and I do this sometimes even when I know that I'm going to disagree with what I look at. This is why I find it humorous that, you know, those of the leftist persuasion, that these, I don't know, whatever you want to call them, people now, the NPC bot people, whatever. Oh, they're so afraid, you know, to listen to somebody else's point of view. And I find it entertaining. Like I say, sometimes I'll listen to stuff and it's like, I know going in, it's like, well, I'm not going to agree with this, but I just want to get a taste of it because I want to have an idea of how. Anyway, this video was some highly trained Protestant teacher, preacher sort of guy, you know, very supposed to be very intelligent. And he was talking about the Antichrist and, of course, the book of Revelation. And it was another one of those deals when it's like, I'm nowhere near where this guy is at. You know, it's because it's more of the same. I guess part of it, too, is probably because I am getting older and I've heard so much of this before. I heard for years, I listened to Christian quote-unquote experts go on and on about how the Soviet Union was the manifestation, you know, of the Antichrist, and whoever happens to be the current Soviet premier at that time was the Antichrist, and Jesus was coming back tomorrow to stop, you know, Armageddon or whatever. And this guy was much the same. Of course, they just changed the definitions. You see, when you get into the book of Revelation talking about Armageddon and the Antichrist, It's kind of like the evangelical version of climate change. It is. It's the evangelical version of climate change because they just keep moving the goals. They never say, well, we were wrong about that. They just keep moving the goals. They just keep shifting them around. You know, I always laugh because with the climate change thing back when I was a kid, it was global cooling. We were heading to a new ice age. Then it slowly shifted to global warming. And now they've just doing climate change. So it kind of covers it covers all of the bases. It's the same way with these evangelicals. Anytime they get into prophecy, Armageddon, end times, Antichrist, in particular, the book of Revelation, they just have to keep moving. They just keep having to redefine it. The Antichrist is going to be, you know, whatever latest Soviet premier was, and the Soviet Union is this kingdom in the book of Revelation. Stop, please. Just this guy was no different. This guy was no different. He's spouting out passages from Revelation, trying to apply a literal meaning to everything he sees around him today, and not understanding it at all. Something I caution against doing it. It was the stuff you would expect, you know. We see the Antichrist, you know. You know, the Antichrist is going to trick Israel, and you see Israel is, and of course the entire time he's talking about Israel, modern nation state, because same name. And again, this is supposed to be a well-degreed, you know, religious expert. And it always, I'm amazed. You have this person who's being interviewed and obviously is, you're supposed to look at this and go, well, this guy, he's an expert. I better listen to what he has to say. He's got a PhD. He's very smart. He's very intelligent. And yet right away, he tells you that he doesn't understand the difference between Israel in the Bible and modern day Israel nation state, because same name. So it's got to be the exact same thing. I just, needless to say, I couldn't listen to the whole thing, but I did listen to a long enough sample to basically throw up in my own mouth and keep moving on. This is what counts. I see these things. You say, well, GBD, why would you put yourself through that? Because I look at this and you know, I want to understand why people do the things they do and believe the things they believe. And when it comes to the church and Christianity and why people are so off base. Well, when people like this are their experts, where they don't even grasp that when they read the Old Testament and read about, you know, Israel, they don't understand that that's not the same thing as the modern nation state of Israel, because after all, they got to be the same thing. They have the same name. If this is the level of understanding that your experts have, your teachers, your people who are supposed to be, you know, setting the tone and setting the direction of what congregations are following and understanding, no wonder people don't have a damn clue. You know, I mean, really, it isn't any wonder. It's really no wonder we wind up seeing ridiculous things. I talk about this on recent shows, but you know, when you have these cases where like somebody is killed or somebody's murdered, you know, out and out murdered by somebody in a brutal, sadistic fashion, and they get caught, and they basically, I mean, they're caught. It's not even vague that they did it. And you will have the victim's parents or something show up in the courtroom and plead for leniency on the killer and talk about how I forgive them. And it's sickening. This is some sort of Christian virtue signal. But again, it's because they don't understand. You know, they get told by their experts, by their teachers, by their preachers, you're supposed to forgive your enemies. And they don't even understand what that means. You know, it's not even explained in a way, because obviously, you know, those who are instructing them don't understand. You know, I can't imagine a situation to where you would go up and stand before court and ask the judge to deny justice and think that that is a virtuous thing. You know, your loved one was murdered by this person. And when you stand up there and ask the court, well, please don't punish them accordingly because I forgive them. You are asking the court to deny justice. And this is an ungodly thing. This is an anti-Christian thing. This is an ungodly thing. We should never wish to deny justice. Is it maybe you're trying to do something that you think people will pat you on the back and say you're such a good, virtuous person for? But that is not the godly way. You should never seek to deny justice. What about the person that was murdered? Do they not deserve justice? But again, people have this twisted view of what it means. You know, what it means to forgive somebody. I always explain it as we always have to put ourselves in the context that we're supposed to be as much like Christ as we can be. Well, if we understand our relationship with God, then we understand better how we relate with other people. You know, the Lord isn't going to forgive you if you are unrepentant. So why the hell would you forgive somebody else, you know, for being unrepentant? Now, we're not supposed to return evil for evil because we're told, you know, If you treat people right, if you treat people fairly, and they turn around and crap all over you, you're piling coals on their head. They're going to answer, you know, they're going to answer for that. But your conscience is clear. I think one of the ways too is to understand it, to at least keep the context in your mind that justice is going to come around, whether you see it in this life or whether you're not. You know, how do you forgive somebody that has done a very bad thing? And I don't know, perhaps instead of the term forgiveness, it's a matter of getting to a point where you can just let things go. You know, you ever run into somebody that's like hung up on things that happened years ago? You know, somebody has slighted them in some way, shape or manner, or somebody treated them poorly, or somebody did something to them, you know, like 20, 30 years ago. And a lot of times, whatever it is just a petty, petty thing. That person may not even remember it. And yet you'll run into these people and they're still hung up on it. You run into people that are basically middle age and they're still hung up on crap that was going on in high school. And you're like, dude, let it go. You know, perhaps in this context, forgiveness is not really the right word. It's let it go. Let it go. Because if you understand the context spiritually, you're going to reach a point. Like if something happened years ago, for instance, and you're probably never even going to see that person again in your life. But understand that when you leave this world and enter the eternal realm, one of two things, you know, somebody that has done you wrong, somebody has sinned against you. When you leave this world, one of two things is going to happen with that person when you catch up with them, so as to speak. When you cross over into the next life, one of two things. Either A, they're going to be, because we talked recently about you're either, you know, the law or you're under grace. These two things operate side by side. We're not rehashing that. Go back and listen to the shows. That's why you can't miss anything. Amongst all my ramblings, there is information here, I believe. You leave this world, that person is going to be, and understand now while you're in this world, that eventually, look, that person is going to be under one of two things. They're either going to be under grace, as you are, in Christ, which means they did repent. They have repented of their sin. So why the hell are you holding on to it? If they've repented, then you're supposed to be Christ-like and have forgiven them. Now, perhaps, again, you haven't seen this person in decades. Again, who are you harming by holding on to it? Let it go, for goodness sakes. Because if they're under grace, they've repented of their sin. Why are you holding on to it? That puts you in a bad position. Or if they're not under grace, that person is under the law, by which they will be judged under the law, and they will be judged fairly, and you will receive justice for any slight against you, whatever case may be has happened to you. They're going to be under one of two places. They're going to be under grace, or they're going to be under the law. If they're under grace, then they have repented, and God has forgiven them. And so you should have too. Or they're going to be under the law, in which case they're going to be judged by God according to their deeds. And again, justice will be served. And yet time and time again, we see the MCC with their tolerance, they twist all of these things about, you know, your enemies, whenever the New Testament talks about your enemies, and they turn it into this weird pacifism, you know, and that's not what is being spoken about, you know, and it's one thing when people who aren't believers and they think that's what it's supposed to mean, because they obviously they're not going to understand what's written. And then they see these MCC people going around not understand what is written. And they interpret this as you're supposed to let people just stomp all over you, walk all over you, whatever. And it's some sort of weird form of pacifism. And it's just not what it is. Again, for somebody to stand up there and ask the court to deny justice to the victim because I'm such a good person, I forgive them. What? Why? Why are you forgiving? What, that isn't even your role to forgive them. I mean, if you're going to let it go that they murdered your loved one, well, I mean, yeah, at some point you need to let that go. But forgiving them, I mean, is that even your job? I mean, you need to let it go because you're going to understand that justice is going to be served in this life and the life to come. But that's as far as it goes with you. You're not the judge. You're not the court. And up there and ask the court to deny justice to your dead loved one? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. But again, you look at what their experts say. It's not hard to see why. It's a funny thing. As we get older, yes, as you can see, we're not just hanging on one topic this week. We're rolling. We're rolling through all sorts of things. So funny thing, as you get older, and it's not really related to age. As you, when I say older, I guess a better way to put that is, as you spiritually mature, you find that the way you pray changes. I have found this. This is what I have found, and I believe you'll find it too. The way you pray changes dramatically. And I'm not, look, if this isn't where you're at now, it's not put down. I'm just saying, as you mature, expect this. Don't be surprised when it comes about. I was thinking about this here a while back. I was reflecting on the way in which my prayers have changed. And they've changed a lot from when I was a young man. You know, over the years, I've seen the way and how I pray has changed dramatically. My prayers now, What I would consider my prayers now, I'm very seldom actually am saying anything to God. You know, I'm reading the Bible and I'm walking. And I pace when I'm a thinker, or if I'm talking on the phone, I pace around. Drives everybody crazy if anybody's around. Like when I'm on the phone, I pace around. I don't know why I do that. And in the same way, I read the Bible and I'm seeking God's wisdom. I'm trying to understand. I'm reaching out and hoping the Holy, you know, praying the Holy Spirit will say something. But I'm not saying any words. I'm reflecting and trying to understand. I'm trying to listen and understand what God has said, is saying. And I wind up, I found that I was thinking about this the other day, and it just kind of popped in my head that I actually don't really say very much towards God anymore. And when I do, it's very, very brief. Now, years ago, when I was a young man, especially, and it's obviously something shifted over time, you know, I'd be like praying all the time. And I look back and I kind of chuckle at myself for how immature my praying was, because I was always praying for something. You know, I was always like praying, if I only have this, you know, basically for materialism. And it was such a, it's kind of like when you look back on your childhood and your childish worldview, and you look back and you kind of laugh at how naive you were. It's kind of like that. I look back and I would always be praying about something, or I'd be praying about things that were like, I look back and it's like, why did I think God would even care about that one way or another? Just make a decision and go on. God doesn't care what shoe you're putting on first. I mean, obviously, I'm just being extreme, but I'm serious. I look back and it's like you're praying over like trivial things. It's like, no, just make a decision. As you get older, when you do speak, as you mature, I got to quit saying older. As you spiritually mature, your prayers are going to become more like the Lord's Prayer. When Jesus gave the example of the Lord's Prayer, it's very brief. When the disciples said, well, Master, you know, how should we pray? How should we pray? And he gave out, you know, what we're all familiar with, the Lord's Prayer, which when you think about it, is not this long, rambling, grandiose thing. In fact, Jesus warned against that. You know, he said the heathen, they think they, with their many words, they're going to be saved. You know, just keep it brief. I think one of the key phrases in the Lord's Prayer is, you know, your will be done on earth. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. There is the key, I think, to our prayers. Instead of praying about what we want, what we're hoping to get, this, that, or the other, when we, the more in tune we get with what God's doing and we understand where we're at and the world around us and our role of what the Lord is doing, we wind up praying for what God is doing anyway, if that makes sense. Instead of trying to, like, in other words, with our prayers, when you're younger spiritually and immature spiritually, you're praying like you're trying to convince God to do something. It's like you're trying to steer God one way or the other. If I pray hard enough, God will steer over this way and do what I want him to do. But as you spiritually mature, you're trying to figure out where God is going, and God is going over here. So I'm praying that, Lord, please go over here, which you think that's where he's going. Lord, please accomplish this in the world. Lord, please accomplish this in my life. Lord, please accomplish this in my community, whatever. And you're praying for that because you believe that's what God is doing. If that makes sense, you're praying for what you think he's doing anyway. In other words, you've given up on the idea that you're going to convince him and steer him, in other words, manipulate him into where you want him to go. You think God needs to be over here. When you're spiritually mature, what you're doing is you think God should be over here and doing this. And for some reason, he's wandering off over here. I got to pray hard. I got to pray. I got to get real emotional. I have to get real emotional, and with tears and pleading. I got to convince God to get over here where he belongs. I got to convince him to get over here and do what I think he needs to be doing. It sounds bad when you lay it out like that, but it's basically where a lot of people wind up praying when you're spiritually immature, trying to steer God. You're trying to convince him. When you catch yourself rambling, because again, Jesus warned specifically, you know, keep it short. Don't with your many words, you're not going to be saved. Quit rambling. When you catch yourself rambling, and it's easy to do, especially if you're dealing with a big issue in your life and you're real anxious and you're concerned, when you catch yourself rambling on and on at God and you're attempting to in your prayers, stop for a minute and ask yourself, who am I trying to convince here? Am I of the mind that God has no clue what's going on in my life? I mean, really, who are you trying to convince? And are you really seeking God's will? Or are you just trying to convince him to go and do what you want him to do, to be where you want him to be? As you mature spiritually, and honestly, it kind of coincides with age. You know, and people mature at a different rate, you know, but generally, I mean, time continues to pass, and this is a lifelong process. This is a lifelong marathon. This is a lifelong work. And so it kind of happens that as you are aging, you should be gaining at least spiritual maturity and understanding of these things. But as you do so, You get the perspective and you realize how pointless it all is. Case in point, I'm going to use myself as a case in point without getting into specifics because I ain't airing all my dirty laundry out with y'all. I believe that right now, like with this discussions we're having right here, I believe with all my heart I'm right now doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I do. I believe that a part of God's plan, and again, this isn't speaking highly of myself, this is speaking in humility. It is a part of God's plan, whatever little part of it, just this little fraction of a part of his grand scheme of things, I believe that right now I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I have this comfort that I don't wake up every day and go, man, I'm supposed to be doing something else for the Lord and I'm missing it somehow. I don't believe that. I believe I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm right here at where I'm supposed to be at, doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But when I look back on my life, some of the decisions I made and the choices I made and the paths I took that ultimately resulted in me being here were really bad. Really, really bad. I made a lot of stupid, sinful decisions that were mistakes that I paid for because they were stupid, sinful decisions. And yet, even as a result of my own rebellion against the Lord, I still wound up where I'm supposed to be. When you realize this, you realize that if God can still have you wind up where you're supposed to be, regardless of if you're making decisions in rebellion and in a sinful state, if God can still, even through all that, because obviously he's outside of time, so he knows where you're going to wind up at. But if he can do that, how much more so if we're actually seeking him, if we're actually submitting to him, we're coming to him with a humble heart, and we're really trying to figure out where we need to be and what we need to be doing for him. If in sin and rebellion, you can ultimately wind up doing the Lord's work and being, you know, well, looky here, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And I wouldn't be here if I hadn't made awful, sinful decisions way back when. If that is the case, then how much more so if we're not in rebellion? How much more so if we are actively seeking and actively trying to understand and actively trying to wrap our minds around what the Lord is doing in the world around us and on our lives? How much more so are we going to wind up? He's not going to screw it up. Don't we relax? Relax. He's not going to screw. He knows where, wherever, whatever you're supposed to do, whatever role you're supposed to be, and you don't know maybe what that role is. Look, you're going to wind up where he wants you to be, one way or the other. Even if you just totally, there is no such thing, I guess, I'm going to get it spelled. There's no such thing as screwing up God's plan. You're not going to screw it up. Don't worry. Relax. Take a deep breath. You're not going to screw up God's plan for you, whatever role you're supposed to be playing. You're not going to screw it up. He's going to have, he knows where you're going to be 10 years from now, 20 years, whatever. He knows where you're going to be, and he knows if you are a part of what he's doing, you're going to be doing what you're supposed to be. Don't worry about that. You are not going to screw up his plan. And again, some of this comes from just understanding from experience. Again, if you can sin and rebel, and then one day, years and years later, look at where you're right where you're supposed to be, doing what you're supposed to be doing, and a part of the path that led you here, believe it or not, is actually sin and rebellion. And he can factor that in to the point where you're still where you're supposed to be doing what you're supposed to be doing. Then again, how much more so if you're not in sin and rebellion and you're trying to actually seek his will and submit and you're willing to go wherever he tells you to go and do whatever he tells you to do, what you think you want to do, you're able to set that aside. How much more so? You're not going to screw it up. He knows what he's doing. Quit trying to steer him. Relax. It's going to be okay. Quit trying to figure it out so hard. You know, God's going to have you wind up there. Just instead of trying to figure out, what does God want me to do? What does God do? Look, instead of trying to figure that out, just make your decisions day by day and try to do the right thing. Things become habit forming. You know, they really do. We're creatures of habit. And whether those habits are good things or bad things, we talk about, they toss this word around. It's a real popular in our society today. They talk about addictions, and they've got addictions for everything. People are addicted to this, addicted to that, addicted. But really, when you think about it, addiction is nothing more than habit taken to the extreme. Habit to the point to where, you're just so set on it becomes a central focus in your life. Maybe even an idol on some level in your life or not. In your life in some way, shape, or form. But we're creatures of habit. And if you get in the habit of sin, a lot of sin people have a hard time overcoming. It's just things they've habitualized and it's become, they've integrated it into their lives, and it gets really hard to break that sinful habit. But you see, the flip side of that coin works just as well. If you get in the habit of doing the right thing, it just becomes, it becomes habit forming. And what I guess I'm trying to spit out is, instead of getting like hung up, because I think we can get hung up on, what does God want me to do? And we try to picture like some grand thing, Like, we're going to be the prophet wandering around, you know, doom, doom. You can tell I personalized that one. It's a doom. You're all doomed. This is what God says. You're all doomed. Instead of trying to visualize that and getting hung up on what your role is, and you're not going to imagine what it is anyway because you're stuck in time. You don't know what is yet to come. The truth of the matter is God may just have some little teeny tiny role for you to play. But I think we can get hung up. We get hung up on trying to figure out, you know, what are we supposed to be doing? I got to figure out what God wants me to be doing so I don't get in trouble for not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Would you punish your child for doing something, for not doing what you wanted them to do? If you were a parent and you have a small child, would you punish that child for not doing what you wanted them to do when you never told them what you wanted them to do? Like, I don't know, you want them to go outside and pick up their toys out in the yard, but you don't say nothing. You're just chilling out. And then kids walking through the room, you get them, start beating his ass, and the kid's like, why, what did I do? You didn't go out in the yard and clean up, pick up your toys. Child's going to be like, you didn't tell me. Nobody told me I was supposed to be doing that. Get this attitude, like that's how God's going to do us. He's going to tell you. You're going to wind up doing what you're supposed to be doing. Instead of worrying about where that eventually is going to lead you, look, I'm going to let you in on it. This is one of those spiritual life hacks. Try to get close to him. The closer to him you get, the more you're going to have the drive to do the right thing. And when I say do the right thing, just in your decision making, do the right thing. Love your enemies? Well, that just means treating people fairly. Well, if you're in the habit that you don't cheat people, you don't screw people over, you know, you don't get one over on them, you know, and cheat them out of money or whatever the case may be, every chance you get, you're not in the habit of doing that. That's like a foreign concept to you. If you get in the habit of doing the right thing, you're already in line with what God wants you to do, and you're going to find yourself, things are just going to flow. Sin leads to death. We're told that it's written, sin leads to death. So the flip side of that is, if you're in the habit of doing the right thing, you're going to wind up basically going down the right path. You understand what I'm saying? You're going to wind up, when you get in that habit, look, you don't have to worry about it. You're going to make your decisions. You're going to just try to do the right thing and everything you do. And you're going to be okay. You're going to wind up where God wants you to be. You're going to wind up where God wants you to be regardless. Okay. It's not up to you. You will wind up where he wants you to be. Just make it a habit. Do the right thing. Do the right thing. Don't worry about what everybody else is doing. Make your decisions. Make the best decisions you can. Get in the habit of doing the right thing. As you seek God, that becomes easier because his laws are written on your heart, and you will try to do the right thing just as an automatic thing. It's not even really something you have to make a conscious decision of. You find your automatic decision-making process in your mind is weighing, well, what's the right thing to do? You're not sitting there thinking, I wonder what the right thing God wants me to do. It's just the way you think, you know? I mean, it doesn't occur to you, hey, here's a chance here I could cheat this guy out of $20. I mean, that's just not the way you think. It doesn't even occur to you. It's going to be okay. These things, I always say, these things are not that complicated. They're really not. You know, walking a spiritual life, I mean, it's. I'm not saying it's not difficult. It is difficult because we live in a sinful, fallen, wicked world. It is difficult, but it's not complicated. You got people trying to make a living making it complicated. It's not. It's really not all that complicated. So don't make it complicated. Relax. Get in the habit of doing the right thing. Seeking God. Spiritually maturing. When you get in the habit of doing the right thing, you're naturally, like I say, if sin is the path to death, if sin leads to death like a road, if you're doing the opposite, if you're in the habit of doing the right thing, it's going to lead in the opposite direction, isn't it? So you're kind of naturally be walking towards Christ. See, it took me a while to get all that spit out. I had it in my head and it's like the words wouldn't come together. If sin leads to death, if sin leads to death, then if you get in the habit, and again, these are habit-forming things, you get in the habit of sin, it just becomes a part of your life, but it leads to death. But if you get in the habit of doing the right thing, you're going the opposite direction. Your spiritual life is naturally going to lead you closer to Christ. Relax. It's not that hard. People try to convince you it's hard for whatever reason, because it makes them look smarter. I do. I think so. I was talking earlier about PhDs talking about, experts and they don't even understand modern nation state of Israel. It doesn't equal Israel. The Bible, they don't even understand that. People try to turn things into something really complicated sometimes so that they can feel like, it makes them smarter. You need me. You got to have me explaining these things. It's just not that hard. Relax. Relax. Jesus said his burden is light. It's not that complicated. It's not to say it's not difficult. It's difficult to be in this world, be a godly man. But it's not all that complicated. We're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you for joining me this week. I really appreciate you stopping by. I hope you got something. I really do. I hope you got something out of it. And I say it pretty much regularly because we are covering new content Monday through Friday here on Radio Alvin. I hope you all check all of that out. Dr. Johnson's stuff is always top notch, of course. I do what I can with the Daily Nationalist. I miss Sven. I miss Sven a lot. Can't wait till the day. We'll pray for the day he gets out and returns to us. So once again, thank you. Thank you for those who dropped something in the plate. It means a lot to me. It really makes a difference. Encourage you to do so. As always, I hope you'll join us back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.